Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name is John, and with me, as always, loyal as always, Steve. How you doing?
I'm like a puppy, John. I actually have a puppy that I treat very well, but she's still very always by my side, even if I don't want it. So I know how you feel. I am that puppy to you.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. A very well educated, insightful, and expert in the world of finance and banking puppy who also poops on the bathroom floor.
Sometimes.
Exactly. Well, this week we're lucky to have a serial entrepreneur and most recently the founder and CEO of Mega Stock Picker, Jamie Cohen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me, John. It's nice to be reacquainted. We worked together almost back in, I think, in 2000, right?
2001 was the last time I saw you in person. Yeah.
Yep. That was a lifetime
when
ago.
You were giving me my last check, I think.
Yeah. That's correct.
If that.
Yep.
Yes, time. Yes. The original .com bust.
Well, that was September 11th. After September 11th, the markets kind of went down sideways.
There wasn't a whole lot of appetite for risk after September 11th, for sure.
Not at all.
Yep. Yes, I will disclose. I have met Jamie before and worked at a very interesting company called Round One Private Capital Marketplace. And now Jamie you've been working on another company, All Rounds. And now Mega Stock Picker. What was the pain point or the problem that you saw that made you want to do start Mega Stock Picker?
Well, you know, I have been working in fintech since Round One, and then with All Rounds, which were focused in on the private markets and automating the private markets. And before that, though, when I did work on Wall Street, I worked for one of the first quantitative hedge funds in 1992 to 94. And that was before it was fashionable to be in a hedge fund or a quant hedge fund. And then I worked at Chase Bank and helped build their high yield bond research and trading system. So one way or another, I've been involved in technology and finance for my professional career. So I've always been about making things more transparent and providing users with information and ability to stock pick or just ability to you know, get a opportunity to understand the markets better and be more proactive and provide a more egalitarian platform for the stakeholders.
That sounds like a really big goal. Are you working with any large financials, or is this your project?
Well, we're in the process of, we've been in development for over 4 years, actually. So since 2018. So we're taking the time. This is a big project, and it has to be built accurately and correctly and be able to scale. Because as you probably are aware, there's over 7,000 stocks in the market. So it's got to be able to scale. It's got to be able to react to information in real time. So this isn't this is a project, a system that really needs to be battle tested, and that's what we're doing.
So Jamie, the most difficult challenge now at the moment, is it to basically create the technical infrastructure to do all this stuff, or is it the fact that the market is sort of down now and there seems to be a pullback from retail investors? What would you say is the biggest speed bump to get you guys to actually go to market?
The system takes in, all the information in the markets relative to interest rate changes and revenue growth and other parameters around technical analysis. And it uses all this information to do predictive modeling and basically pick stocks, and it goes long and short. So it's sort of market independent.
So who are the customers? Is this for investment managers, or are you looking at some kind of retail play, or for the Wall Street banks again?
Well, it's a lot like what I did with All Rounds. You know, I never made a distinction between individual investors and institutional investors. and company executives and service providers. I think that's a mistake that a lot of platform developers in the fintech space, mainly focus in on one type of user and don't look at the marketplace and the stakeholders in that marketplace. So this system is used by individual investors, institutional investors, company executives that need to manage investor relations and managing their stock price. It's a system for people in the public markets,
which can basically be anyone, right? So the idea is that, again, you can essentially provide some guidance on whether you should go long on a stock or short. What kind of inputs are, so you mentioned that you're getting a lot of different inputs into this. What kind of inputs are you looking at ingesting now? And what's been the most surprising input that you think have had the most impact on the platform?
Well, I think to take that last question first, the thing that I think is that one of the things that I learned having been through the pandemic is how to model when there's what we call a shock to the system, whether it be a force majeure or a pandemic or, some kind of sovereign crisis or some other instability. It has an impact on growth rates, but differently for different companies. So, for instance, in the pandemic, the common wisdom might have been, oh, there's a pandemic, all revenue is going to get clobbered by, like, say, 30 or 40%. But that's not always the case. Depending on the industry that you were in, some industries actually grew by 30%, like, for instance, Zoom. And others, like United Airlines, Peloton, exactly. Restoration Hardware, they all went up. What didn't go up was United Airlines, and gas did not go up. So there, it depends on industries. And then, there are other things that are, as the market goes along, the impact of interest rates on the discount rate and how that plays itself out was also something that I never realized the impact. It makes sense because it's the denominator of the dividend discount model, but at the same time, the impact is much bigger.
Yeah, I'm sure. The past 4 years is a very interesting time to start any kind of company. How has that been? What you're developing during like a kind of a key point you're taking off during the lockdowns and all that? Did that make it easier to find people that were wanting to work remote anyway, or was that kind of hard to get going?
I'm using the same development team that I've passed 14 years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, so a reliable crew.
And smart.
I do have reliable people who are not smart. So I know what you mean. But it helps when they're smart too. So what is the output of this? I mean, there is a difference when you try to address, let's say, personal finance managers who need like a reporting and to be able to explain like a portfolio construction to a retail customer versus like an asset manager for institutions versus a retail has their particular needs, mostly around data, I guess, for reporting or they're not putting together optimized portfolios for a lot of people. What are the outputs? What do you say, like, this is a good stock for this time frame? Do you put in some parameters and it gives you like the stocks that are within the range?
Well, it depends on what you are looking for. For some, it might be who are more proactive. They may want it to be more of like a very smart stock picker. For others that are more passive, they may want the system to create portfolios for them and actively manage their portfolios and be able to, see performance, every day and adjust accordingly. So it really depends on the scale, where you fall into the, am I more active? Am I less active? What do I want?
Right. So you set up some parameters in the system first, and then it'll give you like some stock candidates within that system, or is it scored, like the highest score first for what you want?
Yeah, it will score. But again, that's more of a stock screener. But for many, they would just rather have the system you know, actively buy and sell their stocks for them as long as, you know, they're adhering to certain parameters.
And is the idea to launch in the U.S. first and tackle the U.S. stock market first and then go global, or just focus exclusively longer term on the U.S. market?
It's really, I mean, you know, as you know, there are foreign stocks in the public markets in the U.S. So it handles foreign currency translation. That's not a blocking item. So.
Excellent. But the customer base will be U.S. based mostly or only, right?
I mean, you know, it's not, it's sort of agnostic for now. I mean, that's obviously, the U.S. is in my own backyard, so it's the easiest one. But, you know, there's no reason why this methodology can't be applied to different, you know, markets.
And we mentioned at the top of the call that actually you have a long history of being an entrepreneur. You have launched companies as well in the past, I think two or three or so. I'm wondering, what is the biggest lesson that you've learned during your past experiences that you think you're bringing to bear now with Mega Stock Picker?
So, you know, I mean, gosh, I think every time you start one of these things, you learn a different lesson. You know, I've learned a lot of lessons. I think every time that you do learn a different a lesson, there are lots of, you never stop learning. I think what ends up happening is you just sort of accumulate all these lessons, and it helps you decide what traps to avoid.
Yeah, you know, I've heard from different folks who've also launched companies, and what they say is that you don't actually learn a specific thing, like say, don't do this or do that. You learn more ways to recover quickly and ways in which you can avoid common pitfalls, I think. Because it's all, you know, I think ultimately, as you're launching something new, it's green space, right? It's all stuff that you haven't done before, for the most part. But I think it's, again, as you say, finding ways to address things that you know will fail for sure, and sort of shortening the time that you go from idea to failure, so that you can, you know, to use a cliche here, fail quickly and then move on to the next thing.
And sometimes your timing is, you know, like in the case of round one, my first company, Intermedia, was reporting in analytics and, you know, recommendation engine, cutting edge, but we nailed it. You know, the web was just coming on, and people wanted to know who was coming to their website. And fast forward, you know, now you have dynamic content based on usage behavior. But back then you really didn't have that because the internet was just starting. So there was, you know, a lesson on, you know, sort of how to put it together. With round one, you know, private capital marketplace, creating a secondary market in 2000, there was no secondary market, and it was way ahead of its time. With all rounds, it was early, but I learned what worked and what didn't work from round one, and I built a better system with all rounds that focused in on the stakeholders, investors, companies, and advisors, like accounting firms that manage the cap tables and the accountants that produce the financial reports. That had, you know, they all have different outcomes. The timing is important. I think it's extremely important that you protect confidentiality.
Wait, in what sense?
You have to protect your trade secrets. You have to protect your you have to protect your patents. You have to protect your trade secrets. There's a lot, and yet at the same time, you're doing a dance with investors to raise capital. So you have to do things in a certain way.
Got it. Okay. How is Mega Stock Picker going to make money? What's the business model?
It's a license fee. A license fee, and for those that want asset management, an asset management fee.
Oh, interesting. And is that the same model that you use for retail investors also, where they basically pay a subscription and then a fee based on how much money they manage through the platform?
Yeah, I mean, if they're passive, they're just using, you know, the system as a stock picker, I mean, as a stock screener, and they're actively going to manage their own funds. That's one approach. But some people want a more active management.
Got it. And how do you think this will compete? I guess it's a different model, but I just want to hear your take on the whole robo advisor industry and how that's different from what you are building with Mega Stock Picker.
They look at indicators. They look at information that isn't forward looking. I don't want to give away too many details. It's more backwards looking, and the data was suspect a lot of times. And so, just, you know, garbage in, garbage out. and sort of the wrong kind of model, not really taking advantage of some of the machine learning and predictive capabilities that are available today. It's a different approach, better mousetrap.
It's a better mousetrap. Interesting. Interesting. And then in terms of funding, are you going out to look for some funding to launch this, or are you self-funding all this stuff? What's the model here?
Right now, I'm self-funding.
Self-funding, okay. But you do have a plan to eventually go out and get some external funding, right?
You know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm more focused in on growing this organically and strong and methodically and the right way. I know the traditional model is to come up with an idea, go raise a bunch of money. And, you know, I've done this four times now, so I've seen both ways. And the financing of Mega Stock Picker is not the main focus right now because it's self-funded. But at the same time, this is a huge opportunity that we're tackling.
So just some general questions on what's out there in the market these days. What do you think of, since you're processing a lot of data using machine learning, what's your take on the ChatGPT and Alensa that's getting so much press lately?
You know, there's always a shiny object in Silicon Valley, right?
Yes.
A couple of years ago, it was blockchain, right? That was going to change the world. I mean, all these things will change the world, right? At some level. I mean, technology, that's what technology does. It advances, you know, it moves the ball forward. Is there times they get ahead of themselves? Sometimes they, you know, the famous saying is technology is never as good as you think it is in the short term, but it's better than you think in the long term. So maybe that, is it useful? Sure, my son uses it. It's useful, and I'm sure it will have big impact. I know investors that are, you know, invested in OpenAI and, you know, and I've used it myself, and so we'll see.
And what do you think about, like, all these crypto breakdowns lately? You know, we had Celsius, you know, FTX, obviously, Gemini just filed for bankruptcy. Oh, did I say Gemini? I'm sorry, Genesis.
I think they're both, I think, about to go under is my take. But yeah, it seems to be a common thing.
So yeah, some problems in the at least the crypto markets.
Yeah, I mean, you know, John, you and I talked about this a little bit offline, but you know, it's not like I don't understand blockchain, and I certainly understand the technology, and I understand the vision of it. I even back in 2012. I literally tried to buy Bitcoin when it was down at, like, you know, 50, and but you had to put it down on a disk, and it was like, how can I just didn't see how I couldn't actually buy it. You know, there was no wallet, and I guess the issue for me is, so I understand the technology. I understand it. To me, I still don't understand the use case. I mean, when all is said and done, you know, I've never heard an argument that, you know, convinces me what is broken here. I mean, if I want to, you know, not use money, I use my credit card. If I want to go to a foreign country, I put my card in and I get money out of the ATM. You know, I mean, is it about fee? You know, when I up against how many billions of dollars have been stolen at a button press? You know, it just seems like a solution looking for a problem. I don't get it. I don't see the use case. Maybe there are people that are smarter than me, but I don't see a problem. I don't have a problem getting money out of my bank account. I don't get charged broker fees or like a percent structure. The bid and the ask. I mean, shit. For a while there, round was how FTX made its money was hedging, you know, I mean, taking advantage of the arbitrage between the Japanese Bitcoin and the US Bitcoin. So
yeah,
I mean,
that's how we got started. Right.
Yeah. I mean, so you look at, you know, everything, I know why the people that mine this stuff and own a lot of Bitcoin are promoting it. I get that. But it, you know, maybe as a thing to trade, you know, maybe like wheat or whatever, fine. But you know, as far as me buying and using Bitcoin, I've bought and sold Bitcoin before, but I don't do it anymore. I just don't get it. I don't see the use case. I don't see why it's replacing something that is, you know, hugely broken. And to me, you look at the bad stuff that's come out of it, real people have lost a lot of money, and a lot of bad industries have laundered a lot of money. So I don't understand the point, but again, maybe there are people that are smarter than me. I'm sure there are. So
I think like you, Jamie, I'm a bit of a crypto skeptic as well. And I guess, you know, it makes sense what you're saying in terms of if you're in a Western or developed country, right? We have like sort of the stuff. We have our banking system for, you know, folks like us works pretty well, right? But the mm-hmm. argument that I've heard is that it's actually crypto can be a great way for you to store assets if you're in a more unstable economy, if you have actual inflation. Basically, if you're in a different part of the world, what's your take on the or on how applicable this could be to folks in other economies or maybe under different economic circumstances?
Yeah, I don't buy that argument either. I mean, honestly, there's so many. I'm invested in a company that does microfinance in Nigeria and Brazil and all these third world countries. There are lots of solutions. One is blockchain oriented, where you know, the blockchain guy promotes his particular currency. A lot of investment dollars have been put into this space, and you know, investors want to see recouping of their capital investment. So, you know, they're going to be promoters. But, you know, do I need it? I don't see the use case. Do you need it? I don't know.
Yeah, that's good to get a different take. You know, I was wondering why these solutions were taking so long. You know, I've been reading about it. Like you, I was really interested. Bought some Ethereum, and just saw all these projects on the Ethereum Foundation, none of which have gone to production, at least in any meaningful scale at all. And I asked a prior guest who works with monitoring the industry, and he just said, "Well, it's just taking longer than expected, and there's just a lot more to replacing the." Even parts of the financial system or trade finance than we thought, which sounds
that.
Like you could always say it's coming later. It's coming later.
I don't buy that. I mean, there's been, yeah, you know, PayPal and Klarna and this and that. It doesn't, if there's an idea in fintech, it's going to get a solution. It's just that everybody's, you know, the people that are blockchain advocates, you know, are blockchain advocates. It's just an implementation. That's all it is. It's a technology. It's not a solution. It's a technology. You know, it's trying to be a generic platform to digitize art and buy and sell art. Okay, well, you know, great. I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, where do we happen to that market? You know, so
you didn't. I thought you bought a bunch of those Trump NFTs.
I couldn't get them. They were all gone. I put my bid on.
Not for $99 anyway.
Well, yeah, I didn't have $99, you know.
Yeah. Well, it certainly gives us a lot to watch, along with meme stocks and other, I guess, madness of the crowds instead of wisdom of crowds. But your system is kind of a solution for that. It's kind of like closer to financial fundamentals, supply and demand, indicated through technical indicators, things that are kind of really show the value behind the security.
Yeah, it's solving a real problem. That's the difference. You know, it's people want to, if it is able to make people money, how it's implemented is, you know, important. But if it makes people money and people can see how it's making money, and it's all based on, you know, existing methodologies that have been proven throughout history, then, you know, that's a different beast. Yeah, I think a stock picker is just, it's focused in on a real problem. How to make the public markets, investing in the public markets, more accessible to people, depending on what their particular, whether they're professional or individuals or whatever, just making it more accessible and making it smarter.
Does it have that transparency? You can see why it picked what it's picking.
Yeah, no. So it's, you know, it's just a different approach. I mean, providing a an active management based on all the information of all the stocks in the market in real time, you know, and reacting and proactively managing, both actively managing portfolios.
Oh, got it, got it. So when is your expected release date? What are you aiming for?
Right now we're in the process of alpha, and then we'll do beta. Once we are finished with beta, then we will officially launch the commercial version, the paying version.
So we'll keep an eye out for that. We'll definitely have to have you on after that happens, and just before your IPO.
But so anyway, yeah, I'll keep you guys abreast on how as we progress from the alpha to the beta and then to commercial release.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds really interesting. And we'd love to keep up as you grow this out and see how that works out. So we'll follow up. That's Jamie Cohen, the founder and CEO of Mega Stock Picker. Thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Jamie.
Yep, you too. Please subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.